Hello and welcome back to Naturally Adventurous. This is Charlie Hesse. Today's episode is going to be a compilation of voice messages sent to me by Ken. So after his South Africa and Angola trips, he was still unable to go back to Madagascar. So he planned an overland trip around two countries he hadn't been to before, which were Mozambique and Malawi. In South Africa, he rented a 4x4 vehicle that was fitted out with a tent on top and had a full set of camping equipment, very much like the Galadis used on their overland trip. And he set off into Mozambique. His aim was to visit a lot of habitats he hadn't been to before and try and catch up with a few birds that he hadn't seen before. I'll be chopping this up a little bit and adding a few comments of my own and some of my own experiences. I've never been to Malawi, but I went to Mozambique a couple of times. I actually live quite close to the border of Mozambique. I did a couple of birding trips there, one with my family and another one with a birding friend. It's a very beautiful country, but it's got some serious environmental problems, but some really nice wildlife and places to explore. Yeah, so I hope you enjoy this episode today. So we'll start at the border, and here's Ken in Mozambique.
So I slept in this little semi-derelict camp right on the border. And then I headed for the border post as soon as it opened, which was about 8. And crossing borders in Africa is usually stressful, especially in the less developed countries like Mozambique. Just never know what you might deal with. So it took about 2 hours. I had to get third-party insurance, which is this sort of scam where, you know, the cops ask for this piece of paper that's pretty much useless if you ever have an accident, but the cops want to see it. So there's that. I actually wasn't sure up until the last minute whether I'd actually be able to get a visa at the border. And I needed a double visa because I'm coming back from Malawi through Mozambique. So everything was just kind of stressful and time consuming. And then you come out on the Mozambique side of the border and there are just throngs of humanity. People are trying to change money and sell you SIM cards and all that sort of thing. So pretty typical border. And then I was truly trying to cover some ground. And as you know, Charlie, the driving in Mozambique, the roads are pretty decent so far, but there's just cops everywhere trying to get you on speeding fines. And so you just have to constantly watch your speed. And any tiny little village, it'll take the speed all the way down from 120 to 60. And there's cops in almost every single one. So it's this weirdly exhausting form of driving in which you're never going very fast, and there's no real risks other than this sort of unnatural risk of being stopped by the cops. So you're just constantly having to slam on the brakes and crawl through villages and then speed up, and then it's weird. But covered some ground, ended up at a really nice little coastal camp near some dune forest. So it was an incredibly exhausting day. Everything took longer than I thought it would, but very happy that I got a visa to get into Mozambique. Would have been pretty tough because I've rented this safari vehicle for 2.5 weeks. If I wasn't allowed into Mozambique, what would I do with that thing? Drive around South Africa on the beautiful roads. So yeah, great day, but exhausting.
So on my first trip into Mozambique, I was crossing the border and I was being approached by all these people, you know, changing money and selling SIM cards and whatever. And one guy was like, oh, you buy insurance? And I was like, nah, don't need insurance. I've got my insurance already. And I kind of blew him off. I got my visa, got my stamps, went in. And after about a day, I was stopped by the police. And they were like, license, is my license, insurance? And I was like, well, I've got South African insurance. They said, no, you need Mozambique insurance. And I was like, well, you know, I don't have it. And he said, oh, big fine, Malta. Yeah, and in the end, this guy just ended up getting a bribe out of me. And I thought, you know, I'm going to be in here for a couple of weeks. This is going to happen every day. I'm going to get shaken down by the cops for not having this stupid road insurance. So at the next town, I went and just found an insurance company and went in and got this road insurance. But yeah, like Ken mentions, it's just a total scam. It doesn't mean anything, but it just gives the cops some ammunition to kind of shake you down for a bribe. So that was one thing. So I said to Ken when he's going in, don't forget to get the road insurance when you go in. It's very, very important. You hear about all these road laws in Mozambique. This one's like you're not allowed to drive without a shirt on, or you're not allowed to drive with your arm out the window. There's another one, you need to have two reflective triangles that if you break down, you sort of put behind your car for safety. But this is like a requirement. And if you don't have these, again, it's another fine. Another friend of mine was there, and he was stopped by the police, and they said, oh, you have triangles? He says, yes, I have triangles. And he says, oh, please show me. And he pulls out, shows the triangle, and then he puts it back under his seat. And the cop says, but do you have two triangles? And the guy says, yes, I have two triangles. And he says, will you show me your other triangle? So he put his other hand underneath the same seat and pulls out the same triangle and shows him it. And the cop's looking at him, and he said, are you sure you have two triangles? He says, yeah, I'm sure I have two triangles. And the cop's like, I think he just pulled one over on me. So, yeah. But anyway, so I had my two traffic triangles, and finally I had my insurance. But the other thing is the speed. And like Ken says, there's just cops in every small little village. And on this new road that's been made with, you know, Chinese investment, obviously, like everywhere else in Africa, beautiful open roads and, yeah, a little police station in each village. And they've all been given these little toys, these speed cameras. And it's just given them the opportunity just to extort bribes out of people. They've got one of the worst reputations in Africa for corruption, the Mozambique cops. And, yeah, they just drop it down. It's a big open road. You know, it's not like a little town with a small road with kids running out between cars. It's a big wide open road you can see for miles, and there's no reason to drop it down quite so much. So you just, the whole time, you're just paranoid that there's going to be a cop jumping out from behind a tree. It's such a pain. But yeah, that's just part of being in Mozambique.
Long drive today, covered about 560 kilometers. Doesn't sound that much by first world standards, but in less developed country, as you know, that is a lot of ground, because your average speed is about 50 or 60 kilometers per hour, constantly watching for police checkpoints. It's so bizarre, you basically drive half as fast as you easily and safely could, just because there's police everywhere. It seems like quite a pointless thing. And how much is that costing the economy in terms of its impact on transport? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Saw a couple funny things along the way. One was I saw a couple groups of people wearing like almost full body suits with face shields and then with some kind of tanks on their back, and they seemed to be spraying something. At first I actually thought it had something to do with COVID, but then I saw another team of these people next to the highway, so I don't know if they were spraying weeds or what. Yeah, it was bizarre. Another thing that cracked me up was, the police are just everywhere and everyone's terrified of them. Well, somebody had a little roadside stall where they were selling something or other, mangoes or something. And across from their stall, they made this dummy dressed up like a policeman. And it was quite accurate. And so when you see it sort of, you know, 500 meters away, you slam on the brakes, you think, oh man, it's a policeman. And then it gives you a chance to see this little stall and maybe decide you want to buy something there. Quite clever, really. But another long, long, exhausting, but good day. I did finally manage to do a bit of birding this morning in some beautiful dune forest, just these towering sand dunes, probably about 100 feet, 30 meters tall. It's covered in this dense, low forest, and there's a bunch of special birds in that habitat. Beautiful coastline. So that was great to start getting in the stride of some Mozambique birding.
So Ken mentions about these roadside stalls. Yeah, so you get these like towns every once in a while, and you can stop and buy some fruit or cashew nuts or whatever. They often have like a little bakery, because Mozambique was a Portuguese colony. They had these kind of Portuguese type bread, the pão, they call it. And people were just very friendly. Our son was only 9 months old or something at the time, little baby, we were carrying him. But these ladies would all just came up and just picked him up. And, you know, it was just a very kind of free and easy society. Very friendly, very, very charming. So, yeah, the police are a bit of a blot on the landscape. But, the rest of the experience of being in Mozambique is very nice. Ken talks as well about the sand forest. So, I mean, this is basically just an extension of the sand forest in the far northeast corner of South Africa, where I used to live. So it's a kind of habitat that's very special to me. Often this sand forest, it's in like little patches surrounded by this kind of coastal grassland. And there's a whole bunch of birds in there. It's a very birdy habitat. Yeah, and often you get these mixed flocks, and they'll fly between these little patches of forest. But it's a really special place.
Well, today was another unbelievably long but good day. So many things happened today. I felt like 2 months of pandemic lockdown time at home were lived just in this one day today. It's part of what I love about travel. You just feel like you live a lot in a short time. I woke up in this beautiful sort of mixed savanna and forest growing on sand on the coastal plain. Very wild place, which was quite refreshing after the southern part of the coastal plain is just coconut palms and mangoes and just masses of humanity. But much wilder country. Apparently there's even elephants and lions still around. Slept out in a completely isolated wild place. Just woke up in paradise. Did a couple hours of birding and then hit the road.
So this sounds very similar to a place that I was in Mozambique. Again, very wild area. And we were planning just to camp, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And as we were driving along the road, there was a little hand-painted sign saying, you know, beware of lions. And then we pitched our camp and we were wandering around birding. So it was quite an exhilarating place to visit.
It's weird. Mozambique is this huge country. You don't realize how big it is until you start driving around. It's absolutely massive. And I feel like the South has a very strong South African influence. Things are a lot more organized. The roads are good. There's a lot more people and commerce. And that influence just declines steadily as you go north. So at this point, I'm only halfway into the country, but I already feel like I'm in a very undeveloped place. So yeah, I hit a stretch of road that was just nothing but potholes. And it was weird. Yesterday, there was cops everywhere, traffic cops. Today, almost no traffic cops, but there was military all over the place. So these military guys, it was a whole thing. You know, you have to kind of figure out what's the deal. So the first time they stopped me, I wasn't quite sure how to play it. And I went with sort of, I don't speak any Portuguese. And I ended up giving these guys a couple bucks. But then I pretty quickly kind of realized what the game was. And I went through a couple without paying anything, just kind of giving a shrug and, oh, you know, but it takes so long there. Oh, but sir, I mean, it's kind of sad that these guys are begging. There's something very weird about a guy holding an AK-47 begging 12 cents off of you, which happened multiple times. I eventually decided, all right, I'm going to buy a bunch of cigarettes and just give these guys cigarettes because most of them ask for cigarettes. So then it's not exactly a bribe. It saves time because you don't have to have this long begging session. You just kind of say a few words, hand out a few cigarettes, and off you go. So bought a bunch of cigarettes, and so far that's worked pretty well. They're pretty nice guys. I mean, they're it's a very soft kind of like corruption. It's, you know, I really could just drive off, and actually did that once. But I do almost feel bad for these guys. I really wonder, when you've got military standing next to the road begging for a bottle of water or a cigarette, like, what is it that keeps them on the side of law and order and keeps them from just being a bandit? Because they've got the automatic weapon and they could pretty quickly get a lot more money extorting that way than sort of begging next to the road. It's a very weird phenomenon that people who haven't traveled in these sort of third world countries just wouldn't understand.
Ken's technique of handing out cigarettes to the soldiers there reminds me of something I saw in Madagascar, actually. I think on my first visit, I was in one of these little local transports, like a little minibus, just crowded with people. And again, you know, you'd get stopped by the cops all the time. And I think the cops there were trying to, you know, get money out of the drivers, whatever. So this one driver, when he left Tana, the capital, on this long drive, he bought a stack of newspapers, like very, very cheap newspapers, maybe like 20 of them. And then every police stop, he would pull up and he would just hold it out the window. And then the cops would sort of greet him and then just very subtly take the newspaper and then sort of bid them farewell. So it was almost like a little way of just speeding things along, you know, without having to negotiate and waste time. So that was a little, so I was very impressed by Ken's technique there. Another experience I had with the military in Mozambique. So the south, a lot of people and nice road and then cops, like we've discussed. But as you get towards the center of Mozambique, there's some places that have had a bit of instability, some sort of paramilitaries. And the way to keep the traffic safe was to drive in convoys. So they would have certain hours of the day when they'd make a big long convoy, and then everybody would drive together with a military escort. And I wasn't really sure what was happening, but I kind of pulled up to this big long line of traffic, and we were very lucky that this thing just set off just pretty much straight after we arrived. And it was almost like, you know, starting a Grand Prix where everybody's like jostling for position because there's no traffic coming the other way. So everybody's like trying to zoom ahead, you know, the faster cars. So I was like, and it was like a driving game, like a video game, just trying to sort of get to the front of this line of traffic. You know, it might have been a stretch of, I don't know, 50 kilometers or 80 kilometers. And you were just constantly battling for position. And I actually got to the front of this line. But at the front, there was a military vehicle, and then there was like another SUV driving alongside it in the other lane that would normally have oncoming traffic. And this guy would just not let anyone by, and I thought, what is this guy doing? But in the end, I think it was clear that this guy was also military, and they were just keeping everybody within that convoy rather than letting them speed ahead. So, yeah, that was my experience with the sort of military-controlled areas in Mozambique.
So the place I wanted to reach tonight was a big mountain. It's about 7,000 feet tall, called Mount Setseta, which is on the border with Zimbabwe. And there's a couple birds endemic to those highlands of Zimbabwe in western Mozambique that I'm very keen to see. And I knew there was a road up the mountain. I didn't know what sort of condition it was in. I did get some info from a friend that it was okay, that it was passable. I arrived a bit late, sort of 4:30 p.m. after, you know, 9 hours of driving. And it ended up being just pretty taxing road up. You know, I've seen much worse. It was passable, but just very rocky, very slow. Steep slopes everywhere. Just crawling up the mountain. Finally, just as it's getting dark, I get to the top of the mountain. You know, 7,000 feet over 2,000 meters. And it's just blanketed in thick fog. And I still had to go about 5 kilometers to the area where I wanted to camp. And I was just driving along. I could only see about 1 meter in front of me. And there's big rocks everywhere. It was just some of the most agonizing driving I've ever done. So that was my reward at the end of a long day, was just getting to crawl through the fog. I ended up at this place. There's a huge abandoned mansion that, I mean, if you ever thought a place was haunted, this place is haunted. If I was spooked easily, I would be completely freaked out by this place. You know, it's got big chimneys and everything's fallen down around them, and it's in this pine plantation and it's all misty and dark. it's really something. So I'm sitting here in my tent on the top of this mountain on the border with Zimbabwe, next to this haunted mansion, in the mist, in the cold. Another great day. Well, I'd pretty much been running flat out since I picked up the vehicle in Joburg for 4 days, driving or eating or sleeping just about every waking moment, a couple hours of birding. So it was great to finally have a day that was a little bit more relaxed. I woke up on top of this mountain, Setseta, up in the mist and the cold, next to this bizarre haunted mansion. And I spent pretty much the whole day birding. There's actually montane grassland on top that has a few interesting birds and pretty fascinating plants. And then just a little bit down from the top, there's a big patch of montane forest. And it's just paradise. Totally free, you know, no rangers. There wasn't a gate on that road. I didn't pay any entrance fee. Nobody asked me what I was even doing there. It was just a remarkable degree of freedom. Thankfully, I'm completely sufficient with this vehicle. It was another one of these biogeographical missing links to me. A lot like the mountains of East Africa, but with a bunch of Southern African birds. So it really does, you know, those mountains of Eastern Zimbabwe and that go a little bit into Mozambique do connect sort of South Africa with the mountains of Malawi and Tanzania and further north. Yeah, really cool mix of birds, just beautiful forest, nice weather. So it was just a pleasure to not be driving so much and to be doing some walking and really just enjoying that place. I'll tell you, the pandemic, I bring a different mentality to some of these things now. There's these two endemic birds that are only in that mountain range, Robert's warbler and Charinda apalis. And I was really thinking, I will probably never see these things again. I need to really enjoy these birds. And I probably looked at 50 Robert's warblers. It's actually one of the most common birds on top of that mountain. I really brought a certain new mindfulness to my travel and birding.
So there's a mountain range between eastern Zimbabwe and west central Mozambique. And it's just full of localized birds, birds that are only found in that area in southern Africa. So yeah, southern African birders are very aware of this place, very famous. I have visited the area, but I birded the other side on the Zimbabwe side and seen a lot of these specialties. The Mozambique side, the mountains have got a wonderful name. They're called Chimanimani, the Chimanimani Highlands. It's not what most people think of in Africa. You know, it's not this kind of hot savanna or whatever like that. It's cool and green up in the mountains. It's beautiful montane forests. So it's just a really delightful area with some wonderful birding. So, yeah, I was very jealous that he got to head over there.
In the late afternoon, I made my way to a place that I just had on my GPS that said it was a lodge with a campsite. I knew absolutely nothing about it. As I was driving into the area, I was like, man, it doesn't look like there's going to be a lodge here. But I finally got to a gate with a little dude with a book. And he let me in, drove into this place. It's totally bizarre. It's sort of half abandoned, but protects a beautiful little patch of sort of sand thicket and miombo. I met a couple interesting people in there. At one point, I was chatting with a security guy. I was telling him, you know, I'm probably going to go in my vehicle just away from the little lodge area into the bush to sleep so it's nice and quiet. And he was telling me, oh man, I'm sorry, my Portuguese isn't very good. I took this as quite a compliment, like my Portuguese was good enough that I befuddled this guy. And then I was like, are you from Zimbabwe? Yes, I'm from Zimbabwe. Ah, and then we spoke English and it was much better. He was a really cool guy, really interesting guy, Chris. Just working over this side, his family's still in Zimbabwe. Really, really nice guy, super helpful, just memorable in a weird way. He had big long dreadlocks and he walked with a cane, with a limp, and you just had the feeling this guy had quite a story. Like, I wanted to talk to him more, but he was busy. You know, it's another thing I love about travel, you just run into these characters and you have some kind of weird reason to cross paths with people. So it was a fantastic day. Tomorrow, more driving. Well, had a nice little morning session of birding this morning. Had a beautiful red-throated twin spot and some gorgeous bushshrikes. Both of them are just stunningly beautiful birds, just very crisply marked. And it's a good start to the day. And then I basically spent most of the rest of the day driving. Man, it was driving through country that it looks like 10 years ago, it would have been just absolutely pristine, beautiful savanna, studded with big baobabs. And it has just been converted into charcoal. And I must have driven past a million bags of charcoal today. There were these depots of bags of charcoal where they were just stacked up like 10 tall and like 50 wide. And then there'd be 5 or 6 or 7 piles like that. And then you pass one of these like every couple of miles. It's just the scale of conversion of that savanna into charcoal. I've never seen anything quite like it before. It's quite sad. And I mean, it just brings home the degree to which people are impacting this planet. When you see it with your own eyes year after year, it's a big deal. It's not something that can be ignored forever. So still pretty country despite the destruction. Lots of nice granite inselbergs.
Yeah, I must say that I noticed some of the same things that Ken described there about environmental destruction. So I was there sort of 9 or 10 years ago, and as you drove along this beautiful road, every 100 meters or less, there was another person on a bicycle with a big, huge bag of charcoal. And this would go on for hundreds of kilometers. I mean, you were talking literally just a stream of thousands of people all carrying charcoal. And I went twice, and the two visits were about a year apart. And the first visit, I found a nice patch of woodland with some special birds in it. And then I took my friend back a year later, and the forest was just gone. And another place we visited that was in this bird finding guide, it just wasn't there anymore. So the rate of habitat destruction in Mozambique seems to be a good deal quicker than other places. And there seems to be very, very little being done about it. There's some parks that seem well protected, but pretty much everything outside of those parks, at least in the south that has a big population pressure, was really under threat. When you drive around it, like Ken said, it seems idyllic. You know, you see all these beautiful beaches and palm trees, and then it's kind of open grasslands that all look kind of nice. All the original habitat has just been destroyed.
Finally made it to Malawi, drove to the big town of Blantyre, which is quite busy, lots of traffic. My first impressions of this country are not particularly good. Hopefully it will rally and really win me over, but it just seems incredibly overpopulated, and there's just environmental destruction everywhere. In the late afternoon, I drove up to this Sumba Plateau, and I'm basically camping in, there's a sort of campground, but it's basically the middle of a logging camp, and there's like 20 chainsaws all around me, and they're just tearing down this last little bit of montane forest as fast as they can. It's really remarkable. And you look at Google Earth, and there's just almost nothing left on this plateau. This is one of the sites for Malawi's only endemic bird, the yellow-throated Apalis. A beautiful little yellow-breasted, kind of green-backed bird with a black band across the chest. Managed to see that yesterday afternoon. It's quite a beauty. Again, always kind of sad to see these scarce birds in places that are just under attack. One thing that's been a challenge, but a fun challenge on this trip, is just navigation. So I actually have four separate map systems. I have MapsMe maps downloaded, which are pretty good. I have Google Maps. I have something called Tracks for Africa, which I paid sort of $20 for Malawi and Mozambique maps. These are maps that are sort of created by the submissions of people driving around Africa. And last but not least, I have this ancient technology called a map. I actually bought a Mozambique map. That's been incredibly useful, and I've really enjoyed actually just having this piece of paper where I can see how things connect. When you just navigate with maps on your phone, I find it kind of weirdly alienating. You never quite have a feel for the overall lay of the land. So, yep, I've had these four things all going in concert and trying to kind of figure out which one has the best information. Google Maps has completely misled me a few times onto terrible roads or roads that just didn't go through anywhere. They all have their pluses and minuses. I think the way to do it is just to have all four and kind of piece together the best way to go. It's interesting to be in a place where you just don't know, like, what road conditions are. Is it paved? Is it potholed? Is it a little rutted track? For so much of, like, the first world, this stuff is so well known. But traveling around this part of the world, there's a lot of uncertainty. Well, I'm here in the so-called nature reserve on the Zumba Plateau. I'm actually at this campsite that probably was a paradise 10 years ago. It's just completely surrounded by people hacking down the forest with chainsaws. There's like a big lumber camp that's like 20 yards away. There's 30 guys working there right now, stacking boards. Yesterday there was about 20 chainsaws going. Today there's only about 5. But And basically they worked until it was completely pitch black, which was like 7 p.m. Then they were loading up a truck until 8 p.m. And then this morning the first chainsaw started at 5 a.m. So whatever else you can say, these folks are very hardworking. Well, the day started in a not great place, although I have to say that in the pitiful little remnant patches of forest that were actively being cut down, the birding was still remarkably good. Sometimes in these places that are so destroyed, it's almost like the birding is extra easy because the birds that used to live in the forest are all kind of hopping around in scrub. So even that's a bit depressing, but there are some great birds. This Thiolo alifi, which is this sort of chocolate-colored robin. And yeah, the yellow-throated Apalis, Malawi's only endemic bird. And a good selection of green bulls.
So my first reaction to hearing that is just sheer indignation. You know, Malawi is a place that I plan to go to at a point. And of course, as a birdwatcher, I'm going to want to go and see the endemic bird and the other specialties. So just to think that I might go there and they're not there anymore, just because this habitat has just been destroyed, you know, as we speak. It's just very depressing. And it's supposed to be, you know, this endemic is supposed to be only found at a few sites. So there seems to be a big disconnect in places like Mozambique and Malawi and also Angola, which we covered before, that the protected areas are not really protecting the places that have the endemics. So there seems to be a lack of awareness about where to protect. But yeah, very depressing. I certainly hope there's still some other sites that still have some habitat.
After some birding, I went into the big city of Blantyre for an immigration issue. Then after that, I made my way to Liwonde National Park, and this is actually a beautiful park. Seems very well protected now by the African Parks Organization, kind of like a mini Kruger. And within about 30 minutes of entering the park, I stumbled into a group of six cheetahs, two sisters and four young, sort of half-grown young cheetahs. And unlike a place like Kruger, where when you see cheetahs, there's going to be 100 plus vehicles stacked up in like a massive traffic jam and people all getting stressed out with each other, there was just me. I was just alone with these cheetahs in this completely wild open place at the edge of a big pen. So that was quite spectacular, quite special. Something about Miombo, it just always gives me this feeling of being deep, deep in the heart of Africa. It's always kind of mysterious. It's very accessible, but kind of mysterious at the same time. It has a lot of scarce birds. That's one thing about it. It's just always a lot of hard work to find even the majority of the birds. You never find them all. As opposed to other kinds of savanna where you tend to see most of the birds pretty quickly. Yeah, it's quite a cool, special habitat that a lot of people really are not familiar with. The sort of thorn savannas of safari parks like Kruger and Serengeti are just, that's stereotypical Africa, but huge, huge portions of Africa are covered in Miombo. There's three special birds I'm looking for here, a woodpecker, a weaver, and this lesser seedcracker. And I spent the entire day searching and I didn't find any of the three. It's a bit of a paradox. When you're traveling for birding, you want to see your targets and you want to take their pursuit very seriously. But at the same time, you don't want to not enjoy what you're doing when you don't find a target bird. Those things are in tension and it's kind of hard to keep them balanced. So I had a great day. I wouldn't want to just feel frustrated that I didn't find my target birds. At the same time, I do really, really want to see those birds. So I hope I see them tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. Well, I'm finally out of the bush, out of this somewhat remote place, Zalanyama, back into network range. It's a cool place, beautiful kind of deep Miombo feeling. But the birding was pretty tough. It's one thing about Miombo. A lot of the birds are just very low density. It's a very poor nutrient habitat. Usually grows on sandy soils and other kinds of poor soils. So there was one, I mentioned that I had three major targets, and of those, the one I most wanted to see was this Stirling's woodpecker. And boy, I just birded hard the whole time. So I covered about 47 kilometers on bike on little forest tracks. I walked at least 20 kilometers, and then I drove at least 17 kilometers, just driving very slowly and listening for flocks and that sort of thing. And just at the end, I finally found Stirling's woodpecker. It was quite fulfilling to finally see this cool little Miombo endemic woodpecker. It was just unbelievable how much effort it took to find that bird. And I'd never found the other two targets, the lesser seed cracker or the olive-headed weaver. So I'll look for those a bit in Mozambique, but it's all about the journey. It was just being in a nice wild place for a couple days and just intensely birding and looking for these targets was quite enjoyable.
I enjoyed Ken's comments there about birding the Miombo. Yeah, I also find it quite a tough habitat to bird. It's fairly unproductive, even though there's so many cool birds there. You don't tend to see all of them. Yeah, the trick is usually to bird by ear. It's just stand there and listen. And if you hear any birds, you just start tramping towards them. And then looking for flocks. A lot of these target birds, are found in mixed species flocks. I have actually looked for Stirling's woodpecker myself and missed it. I've seen the weaver before. But yeah, very low density of birds in Miombo, but very cool habitat. It's interesting what he was saying about just trying to stay positive and, you know, enjoy your time in a place rather than just getting depressed that you've missed your birds. I tend to try my best. And I think if I've given it my best shot and I haven't found them, then, you know, I don't feel too bad. But, you know, if I haven't put in as much effort as I could have, then I just want to kind of look more and more. But I think it's a good thing to keep balance. But, you know, when you get to the point where you've seen almost everything, you know, there's a reason you haven't seen those final birds. It's because they're, you know, either the rarest or most elusive. So, you know, it's really diminishing returns. You need to put more and more time in just to get these last few species. But yeah, that's birding.
After Zelanyama, I went to this place called Dedza, which is right on the border with Mozambique. This is an area of pretty high base elevation. The base elevation is about 6,000 feet. And then there are all these big granite mountains sticking up, sort of inselbergs. It would be the South African term. And this is the best known area to see a Malawi near endemic bird called Vincent's bunting. It's mostly dark gray, but with this very striking brindled face pattern. And it's quite a cool thing because it's basically an alpine bird. It basically lives in the grassland and rocks on top of these mountains. There's actually very, very few alpine birds in Africa for some reason. So I've found this funny little compound that's part of a forestry university, and I talked to the guardian, and he allowed me to camp there, said he would watch the car. And then I hiked up the mountain, and after an hour or two, managed to find this bunting, this beautiful bunting, and really enjoyed that and really enjoyed the place. It was actually, I didn't know much about the place before I went there, and it was just unexpectedly beautiful. There was some nice Miombo that was in good condition. It's a kind of forest reserve around there. And yeah, I just enjoyed it way, way more than I thought I would. It's a great place. Even without the bunting, it was well worth visiting. Just scenically beautiful and not many people around. Quite refreshing in Malawi. So one more message to bring things up to date. And this is my more traditional evening message telling you about what I did today. So I woke up at this forestry college and I hiked up the mountain again. Spent some more time with the Vincent's buntings. Yeah, a few kilometers up and down this mountain through the grassland and the Miombo woodland. Then I drove to the major southern city in Malawi, which is called Blantyre, very British sounding. And my mission in Blantyre was to get a COVID test, which is needed to cross the border back into Mozambique. So this was a whole nother side of Malawi. I had to drive into downtown Malawi and go to the biggest hospital, which is the Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital, and, you know, park and just walk around and find where do I need to be. There's all kinds of different buildings, and yeah, it ended up being about a 2-hour process, you know, not very efficient. incredibly expensive. It was $100. For Malawians, it's $50. For foreigners, it's $100 to get this COVID test. Lots of queuing, lots of paperwork. Finally got the thing jammed in my nose. And then I actually thought I could get the results by email, which would allow me to leave and go do something cool. But the last minute, they told me, no, you have to come back and pick up the paper results. So I'm actually at a hotel in this big city of Blantyre. It's kind of weird to be indoors, and it's not bad for a night, catching up on some emails and stuff. And tomorrow, if all goes well, negative COVID test, and I'll be back into Mozambique.
So many thanks to Ken for all his messages there. I hope people have found them interesting. I guess you'll find out in the next episode whether he made it back in. I myself also have a PCR test tomorrow morning, which is going to decide whether I can get onto a plane to Africa. So I think it's about time that I had a few adventures myself. Just a quick request for people to leave us some reviews on Apple Podcasts. And also for those that haven't joined us on Patreon yet, if you want to support this podcast financially, you can do so for as little as $5 a month. So do check out the link below. And we'll play out with Malawi's endemic yellow-throated apalis, mercifully with no chainsaws in the background. And we'll catch you next time.